You guys think 29 teams pay him so much that he's going to destroy the GSW from the inside?
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball, as always is expected. Day two of NBA free agency was it day three? I'm confused at where my days are. It was outstandingly shocking, I guess. The first day, just as I finished recording the podcast, we had LeBron James signing with the LA Lakers. Yesterday, about an hour after I finished recording the podcast, we had the news of DeMarcus Cousins going to the Golden State Warriors. We're going to talk about that in today's show. We're going to talk about all the other signings that have occurred since the last podcast was recorded, and also a little bit of a recap of what we saw from day one in the Sacramento and Utah Summer Leagues. So, Michael Bolton,
let's get to it.
Of course, we will start though with the news that DeMarcus Cousins has gone to the Golden State Warriors on a 1 year, $5.3 million contract. Now, there is lots and lots of outrage about this on Twitter. The NBA is ruined. Never watching it again. Some people legitimately saying, oh, it's not fair. It's 100% fair. And if you think it's not fair, then I don't know what to tell you because you don't have an understanding of what the word fair means. Sure, I would have preferred if Cousins had have gone to another team, just as I would have preferred if Kevin Durant went to another team. But what are the Warriors supposed to do? Are they supposed to not try and get as good as they can and to crush their opponents into dust? Because anyone else who doesn't have a winning mentality, they get killed for it. Oh man, well, these players, they're not competitive anymore. They don't want to win. The Warriors want to win, and then they get killed for it. You're killing the NBA. You should be more fair to people. So I don't understand that. And then you go on to the DeMarcus Cousins side of things. Oh, look at him. Look what he did. He took this, you know, he just took no money to jump on a bandwagon to go to the Golden State Warriors. He's ring chasing. Carmelo Anthony took a 5-year max contract with the New York Knicks instead of going for a 4-year slightly lesser deal to the Chicago Bulls where he had a greater chance of winning. Melo only cares about the money. He doesn't care about winning. No interest in winning at all. What a soft cock. All he wants is the money and he doesn't care about basketball. Which is it? We have to make up our minds. LeBron's only won 3 titles, can't be anywhere near as good as Jordan. But if he went and tried to get championships, yeah, and did these sort of things, oh, soft cock, all he's doing is trying to get rings. So I don't see I know where the disconnect is that people just like complaining for the sake of complaining. Now, yeah, look, it's not ideal that we have a player like Cousins going to the Golden State Warriors, but there are many, many factors associated with this, and I'll get into his fantasy stuff later on. I encourage every single person listening to this podcast to go and read Zach Lowe's article on the Cousins signing. It is not like DeMarcus Cousins was turning down $15 million per year contracts. It wasn't the case. It wasn't like he stabbed the Pelicans in the back. Where's his loyalty? Loyalty? He was there for a season and a half, not even a season and a half. They weren't offering big money. They were fine with letting him go because, as we saw, Anthony Davis was aggressively pursuing Julius Randle before the DeMarcus Cousins signing with the Warriors went down. Davis wasn't in there banging on the door of the front office telling him, you've got to bring Cousins back. You've got to pay him all this money. He was out there recruiting one of his other alumni, however you want to phrase it. I think alumnus is the right word. Julius Randle. The Pelicans, now, Cousins has come out and said he didn't have any significant offers from other teams. And people could say, oh, that's bullshit. It's only day two of free agency. These offers would have come. Well, the thing is, DeMarcus Cousins, rightfully so, as a 4-time All-Star, thinks that he should be a high priority in free agency. And if he didn't have any offers in the first 2 days, you could wait till July 28th and then he'd get an offer. That is 100% false. That is absolute bullshit. And if you're deluding yourself to that, that's not how the NBA works. Because there is very limited cap space in the NBA anywhere. Nobody had the ability to go out there and offer him a $15 million deal, really. There wasn't those options. And you can say they're just going to the luxury tax, but that's not how the luxury tax works. You can only go above the cap if it's your own player with bird rights. And the only team that had that option was the Pelicans, and they didn't seem interested. They had discussed figures apparently with his agent, but they hadn't put forward a firm contract offer. They had, according to Zach Lowe, a tentatively scheduled meeting in the next couple of days. And for as much shit as you can give DeMarcus Cousins, and you can give him shit as much as you want, he does have an ego that makes him think that he is the best or the second best center in the NBA. And if you've got that opinion of yourself, and it is widely held by other people, I don't think that he's the best center in the NBA, but other people do, to have that and then be 5 days into free agency or 6 days when this tentatively scheduled meeting is allegedly going to occur, well, you just think, well, is this team serious? Do they want me? Do they have any interest in bringing me back? Because I should be one of the premier free agents out there. LeBron James, Paul George, DeMarcus Cousins. We are the top three free agents. Paul George signed at about 2 minutes past midnight. LeBron made his decision on the 2nd of July and he had his suitors. DeMarcus Cousins, nothing. And then the other thing that, you know, people are, anyone could have matched that Warriors offer of $5.3 million. Well, A, why didn't they? And according to Cousins, they didn't. Or if they did, if they all came to him and said, here's $5.3 million, if the Magic came to you and said, Boog, we'll give you $5.3 million. If the Kings, well, it's a shit example because he's not going back to the Kings. If the Bulls came and said, we'll give you $5.3 million. If the Knicks came and said, we'll give you $5.3 million. And the Warriors came, what are you going to do? Are you going to go to a shit show franchise with a bad team with no ability to make the playoffs? Or are you going to go to a team that doesn't need to rush you back, you're going to take the same amount of money, you're going to have a chance in the playoffs, and you're going to get to play with your friends in Kevin Durant and Draymond Green? It's not like he was turning down $10 million extra from other teams to go to the Warriors. The most that these other teams would have been able to offer him, in all likelihood, is $8 million, maybe $9 million. That's probably about it, considering the cap space had completely gone. The other thing is, a lot of these teams, if you're only getting 2 months out of DeMarcus Cousins and he only wants 1 year deals because other teams were looking to lock him in at, you know, 2 years, $15 million, and that's not going to be good for him as so he can get back onto free agency next season, why are they going to spend money on a $20 million for 1 year contract for a guy who's going to play 3 months of the year, probably be limited for two of those months, and probably not, when there's no guarantee he's going to be even at 75% of the player he was before that? So teams like the Pelicans, who need to really be buckling down and getting the wins in to get into the playoffs, you're spending those sort of resources on a guy for 3 months, and he may not even be the same. Yeah, there was such a large confluence of events. The 2016 cap spike and cap spending, man, all these teams were hamstrung in their cap space this season. There wasn't the space, and I've been saying this for ages, there is going to be squeezes all over the place. Look at how many players are signing one-year contracts. They're all going to be back onto the free agent market next year. So many guys are doing that. There wasn't the space, and it's very easy to say, oh, the big offer would have come in. It wouldn't have. It couldn't have. There just wasn't the space for these big offers to come in, and they weren't coming in for multiple years. So when the offer's coming in, when you can turn, if you can turn down $8 million from the Charlotte Hornets, or you can take $5 million from the Warriors, pretty easy situation when you don't have to be rushed in Golden State. You can take your time. You can get to the playoffs. You can experience winning. And you know, you're not taking a financial sacrifice. And the Warriors aren't going to be able to retain Boogie Cousins after this season. The most that they can pay him for the following year is only $6 million. Now, he could potentially decide that he wants to stay on these limited contracts again, but I think there is absolutely zero chance of that. He wants to show that he is back in full health and he is ready to get a 3 year, $60 million deal in free agency, which the Warriors have no ability to match for the coming season. And if there is no market for him to receive a $20 million a year contract in the next offseason, that means that he has not been able to recover from his Achilles injury, and then he's only worth those $6, $7 million deals. And then there's no big deal there. So I understand that people get frustrated. But the other thing is if you're only on, we know who's going to win the season. Well, if that's your attitude in watching the NBA, why do you watch any other games apart from the finals? Like, if your only enjoyment in the NBA, whether it's following the league as a whole or following your own team, is based on if your team wins a title, why are you watching a game in February between Boston and Toronto? The winner of that game doesn't mean they're getting to the title. It doesn't really mean much in terms of overall placement in the league at all. And you can say, oh, it's good to have some unknowns. But unknowns don't win titles in the NBA. There's 3 or 4 teams pretty much every year in the existence of the NBA that have shots at these titles. Like, enjoy the league for what it is, for these young, up-and-coming superstars, for these players playing at a very, very high level of basketball. Sure, you can say, oh, the playoffs are going to be disappointing. The Warriors are going to steamroll. People loved it when Michael Jordan steamrolled and won 6 titles in 8 years. People loved that. We knew that Jordan was the best player in the game and he was going to win these titles every year. Well, we knew that. Now, things are going to be different this year. The Cavs aren't going to be in the finals. Something will be different. You know, the balance of power is shifting. And the Warriors are probably going to win again. And they'll probably win again there. But that doesn't mean that you can't enjoy anything else that's going on in the NBA. And again, then you have that mentality. The only thing that matters is a championship. And then you kill DeMarcus Cousins for going to a situation which is his best opportunity to win a championship. So I don't... That's a complete disconnect between those sort of thought process. Again, I would have preferred that he went somewhere else. I would have preferred that many players go in other directions. But A, he can make whatever choice he wants. The market wasn't there for him. Go read the Zach Lowe article. There's tons of information in it about just what this situation was. And you can believe whatever you want. Oh, he's lying. He's covering himself, saying there was no offers. Maybe there were some offers, but they weren't big offers. And again, if it's $7 million coming from the Atlanta Hawks or $5 million from the Warriors, I know which way I'm going. It's a pretty simple story. The other thing is, and back to the fantasy thing, Cousins says he's going to be back for training camp. Sure, maybe. He's not going to need to push. Woj says December, January. I think that's a more realistic target. And he is not coming in and playing 34 minutes from the get-go. He might get to 30 minutes a game. Might. I would say by March, maybe. He's going to be 20, 24, 25 minutes over those January, February months. He is not going to be the same guy. His efficiency will take a hit. Nearly every player coming back from an Achilles injury sees dips in their field goal percentage, three-point percentage. Now, he's going to get great looks. He's going to really help this three-point shooting on this team. But with big men, they cop it bad with Achilles injuries. So there's no guarantee that he is going to be the same player. There's also, well, there is a guarantee. He's not going to be the guy who has a 30% usage rate on this Warriors team. It's just not going to happen. He won't have that usage rate. So he won't be, you can say, oh, look, they added a guy who averaged 26 and 12 and did this. Yeah, that's cool, but he has absolutely zero chance of doing that for Golden State. None. There is zero chance whatsoever that he averages anywhere close to those numbers that he was putting up last season for the Pelicans or at any point during his Sacramento Kings career. He's not going to come in and have a higher usage than Kevin Durant. He's not going to come in and have a higher usage than Steph Curry. He's going to be limited minutes. He's going to be playing, he's going to be missing games back-to-backs. He's going to be at lower usage, and he's going to probably have lower efficiency as he comes back. So in terms of looking at him from a fantasy point of view, I would not be looking at him anywhere near the top 50. He was a 6th-ranked player last season, averaged 25 and 13 with over 1.5 steals and blocks. Yeah, a fantastic fantasy guy, a usage of 32. He's not having a usage of that high. And I wouldn't want him anywhere near the top 50. Yeah, do I get 40 games out of him? Maybe. Do I get 30 games out of him at 25 minutes? Maybe. Maybe as a top 100 pick. In all likelihood, I will steer clear of him in most cases. The Warriors team's probably going to be good enough that he's going to rest down the stretch as well. He's going to be resting all through January, February. It's just not a good situation for his fantasy point of view. His defensive struggles are going to be a real problem this season, and I think the Warriors' best lineup and closing lineup probably won't even include DeMarcus Cousins. So there are lots of different things, and it's going to be interesting to see how it all works out. The other thing is, Adam Silver can't do anything about this. Oh man, Silver, what's he doing? Silver's complicit, he needs to step in. He can't do it. It's bullshit. And it is not the same as the Chris Paul to the Lakers trade. A, that was a trade. B, David Stern didn't veto that trade as the commissioner. He was the owner of the New Orleans Pelicans. He said that Dell Demps did not have the authority to make any deal like that, which never actually was agreed upon or signed off on. It wasn't like the trade was agreed upon, signed off, and sent to the league office, and the league went, no. That's not how it went down. It was sort of agreed upon by the GMs, and the ownership said, no, we don't want to do this trade, which was David Stern in that point acting in that capacity as an owner of the Pelicans, and they didn't like the return they were getting. They thought it took away value from the franchise, and they didn't want to give Chris Paul up for that sort of a deal. So that is what that was. It wasn't the commissioner stepping in and saying, oh, that's not fair, you guys can't do it. That's not what happened. That is not how it went down. So that is not the same here. So Adam Silver can't do anything. He can't step in. He can't veto this deal. And I don't think it's anywhere near as big a deal as every two-bit wanker shock jock in America is trying to say. Like, there's so many weird local radio. I mean, the NBA's ruined me. Where's the heart? Where's the spirit? Where's the soul? Shut up. Like, it's not ruining anything in that degree. It is, on the surface, it appears to be a much bigger deal than what it actually is. But there are so many factors that go into it. This is not Cousins saying, I am sacrificing $15 million a year to ruin the league. Screw you guys. Yeah. That's not what happened. So, I don't know. It's an interesting situation. It's not ideal. No one's saying that. Doesn't ruin the NBA. There's going to be still tons of intrigue. Cousins isn't going to be ready to start the season. And it is, at most, a half a season deal, I would say, for DeMarcus Cousins in Golden State. Now, I've talked about that for a very, very long time, as you're well aware. Let's move on to the next deal that went down. And that was one that I really, really, really liked. And that is Seth Curry going to the Portland Trail Blazers. 2 years, $6 million with a player option. We know that Curry didn't play at all last season with the leg fracture. He had surgery to try and repair that. But this is a guy who is bloody good. And I cannot believe that he was able to be gotten for this cheap. He is a player that the Lakers should have been getting instead of Lance Stevenson, instead of Rajon Rondo. The Bulls, like, he is a better player, I think, than Zach LaVine at this present point. Now, he's 6 years older and he's got injury concerns. Not that LaVine doesn't. But he is a guy that has, his advanced stats are fantastic. He's a career 43% shooter from three. He handles the ball. He can get assists. I think it's a great, great signing from the Blazers. Yes, they had to let go. They made some curious decisions, letting go of Ed Davis and Pat Connaughton and Shabazz Napier. But Curry comes in now as the backup one and the backup two. Should be able to see mid-20s in minutes and going to be an excellent three-point streamer on excellent efficiency. And if Lillard has his now annual 2 weeks off over Christmas, Curry can step in and comfortably be a standard league player. So I really, really like this signing for Portland. I think it's one of the best signings in the NBA. It was one of the best signings in the NBA when he signed for Dallas a couple of years ago. He is a really, really strong option, and I think it's a great move from Portland to get Seth Curry over there on such a limited contract, and he slots straight into a very, very solid and stable role. Remember, in 16-17, he was the 84th ranked player in fantasy in 29 minutes per game. Now, he probably doesn't get 29 minutes in Portland, but a 24, 25 minute per game role is within grasp. 10 points maybe, 2.5 assists, a steal, 2 threes, like on good efficiency. Those are possibilities for Seth Curry. A couple of other guys did re-sign with their existing teams. Avery Bradley went for 2 years, $25 million back to the Clippers. At this point, I haven't seen any reporting on the second year. Surely there's a non-guarantee in there because that seems like too much for Avery Bradley, who struggled significantly last season. The Clippers brought in two guards in the lottery in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Jerome Robinson. They shipped out Austin Rivers, you know, ostensibly to give those guys minutes. But there's still Patrick Beverley. Milos Teodosic is still on the roster. Probably not for long. Lou Williams is around. Ty Wallace played so well as a guard last season. So I don't really know what the point is of signing Bradley to that much. And I don't know who else was offering Avery Bradley $12 million per season. Again, the only teams that can really offer these $12 million per year contracts are the players' existing teams, given bird rights and all that sort of stuff. So I don't really understand this signing for the Clippers, especially considering they were supposed to be keeping their cap space available for the summer of 2019. And if this contract is fully guaranteed through 2019-20, then it's a weird one. Yeah, people always go, oh yeah, but he then becomes tradable. Well, maybe, but if he was so tradable, then why was there, you know, not teams out there throwing contracts out there? And it's also like people say in their fantasy drafts, I'll grab this guy. It doesn't fit anything that I need to do with my team, but he'll be tradable later. Well, the thing is, if he was tradable, if someone else wanted him, they would have got him at that similar spot. So I never really believe in I'm signing someone just because they're tradable. Because if someone really wanted them and wanted to give up key assets for it, they would have picked that person up for free. And that's not what happened. A couple of Jazz guys also went back to Utah. Dante Exum with a 3-year, $33 million contract. They obviously believe in him, and he showed some significant signs of stepping forward at the end of last season defensively. His offensive game stepped up as well. Hopefully he can stay injury-free, but I think they want him to be the starting point guard in a couple of years' time, or at least that guy who plays alongside Donovan Mitchell. And Harl Neto comes back on a 2-year, $4.4 million contract. So we've got Rubio, Exum, Neto, Mitchell, Alec Burks there in that backcourt, Royce O'Neal as well playing some of those minutes. So tons of guards there in Utah. Let's go on to have a couple other guys who have changed teams now. Tyreke Evans did go to the Indiana Pacers. I talked about it yesterday as a possibility. Seemed like he was going to go there. He did. 1 year, $12 million contract. This was would have been a much better option with the Lakers cap space than what they spent it on. Well, I'm going to say that for pretty much every player. But Tyreke obviously was really, really strong last season in Memphis. Now heading to Indiana, things are a little bit different. Does this mean, though, that the Pacers look to cut someone like Darren Collinson? Because they've got Collinson. They've got Corey Joseph there as well. Obviously, Victor Oladipo, Bojan Bogdanovic, Doug McDirt, who they just spent a ton of money on as well. Evans was the 41st ranked player last season in 31 minutes. And at this point, I don't know how he necessarily meshes with Victor Oladipo. I'm not a massive fan of him being alongside Oladipo, but he could be an upgrade over Darren Collison. Collison, one of the best three-point shooters in the NBA. Evans did remarkably shoot 40% from three last season. I have less confidence in that than I do of Collison having another 40% three-point shooting season. I don't think that Tyreke is getting back to being a top 50 guy, but he should be a top 100 player. And that could change depending on what happens with Collison, whether he remains. Corey Joseph is there, but he is clearly an inferior option to Tyreke. Tyreke could be that great second unit ball handler, so I'd like to see them continue to start Collison and then have Tyreke come in and play as the leader of that second unit, play some minutes with Vic, but I'd like to keep him and Oladipo. If I was the coach, I would try and keep him and Oladipo as separate as I could for optimal use of their ball handling skills and their lead guard type skills. But Tyreke goes to the Pacers. Another one of these players on a one-year deal who's going to be hitting free agency next year is going to be crazy. There's going to be so many guys. Also, the report today that Jimmy Butler is pissed at Minnesota, doesn't like the attitude of the young guys. Jimmy Butler loves a complaint in general. But then another guy that maybe he's out of Minnesota. There's going to be so many free agency situations next to Kawhi Butler. There's so many guys. It is going to be a very, very interesting summer. Boogie back on the market. Any of these guys, there's lots and lots of stuff going to be going down. So Tyreke, I think, is going to be a player who probably cracks the top 100, but probably doesn't crack the top 50, which is where he was last season. Let's go on to Jeff Green.
My name is Jeff.
He goes to the Washington Wizards on a one-year, $2.5 million contract, veteran minimum deal. Mike Scott left, so we're going to see Jeff Green pretty much move into that Mike Scott role as the backup power forward behind Markieff Morris. It's going to see him at about 20-odd minutes per night. He played 24 minutes per game for the Cavs last year and was the 190th ranked player, 11-3. Maybe he could be better than that, but he hasn't had a top 100 season in the past 5 years, and I don't expect that to change. Now, could he be get better than Markieff Morris at times? Yeah, maybe. Maybe he could be. I don't have massive amounts of hope in that being the case. But he does move into that Mike Scott role. Maybe he also moves into that backup center role ahead of Aiyama Hime. He played a lot of center for Cleveland last season, or they can play Morris at center ahead of Jason Smith there as well. So it's a decent enough value signing. Jeff Green's not a great player. He had some moments in Cleveland and some shit ones as well. But he moves into the really where he needs to fit. I don't know how it fits necessarily with this team. It's a little bit of a weird one with the other players on this team. But it's a cheap enough deal, and he's not really going to have too much of a fantasy impact when we look at it all and it moves forward. So Jeff Green off to the Washington Wizards. Michael Carter Williams goes to the Houston Rockets on a minimum deal, 1 year, $2.4 million deal. Carter Williams can't shoot. We know that. He does provide good defense. He moves in to a fourth guard role, maybe behind Paul Harden and Eric Gordon. They'll probably run a few more of those three guard sets, the Paul Harden Gordon ones, with Ariza gone. So then you've got De'Anthony Melton and Michael Carter Williams, who can play more backup minutes there. He's not going to be a fantasy option. We know that if, say, Paul or Harden gets hurt and he's pushed into 27 minutes, his ability to get rebounds, assists, and steals, they can be useful for streaming, but the points won't be there, and the percentages will really suffer. But he's not a bad defensive option for this team to go out there with his length, be able to defend guys and enable whoever he's playing with, whether it's Gordon, Harden, Paul, to really run things offensively. He only shot 33% from the field last year, 24% from three, and he has yet to crack 30% shooting from three-point land in his career. 26, 24, 27, 23, and 24 over the past four seasons, but still 2.2 assists in 16 minutes and a steal. That translates to 5 and 1.6 assists and steals, respectively, per 36, and 6.5 rebounds, and that has a decent enough level of value if he's ever pressed into a situation where he needs to get more minutes due to injuries in Houston, which with Chris Paul around and Eric Gordon, there's a possibility, plus that ability to push Harden and Gordon up to the small forward role with Trevor Ariza gone. There was a trade today as well. Wilson Chandler was traded by the Denver Nuggets to the Philadelphia 76ers, along with two future second round picks. The Sixers gave minimal cash considerations back. And this is one of those ones where Denver's front office maneuvers and poor contract decision making meant that they had to give up a useful rotation player for nothing, because their owner, who is one of the richest men in the world, Stan Kroenke, was a tight ass and didn't want to pay the luxury tax. Now, they had a big tax bill, but that's what happens when you spend too much money on Mason Plumlee, when you spend too much money on Fartin' Will Barton. Now, apparently, Barton was going to be starting at small forward this season, pushing Chandler to the bench. I don't know who's going to be running backup point guard for this team. Is it going to be Monty Morris? Are they going to bring him in? That was Barton's role last year, to run that second unit off the bench. I don't know how that's going to happen. Will they run more offense through Mason Plumlee in that bench role? But who's their backup small forward now? Michael Porter, is he going to be healthy? I don't know. It doesn't appear like it, but maybe he can come in as the immediate backup small forward. Or do they go back to Juancho Hernangómez? Or is it Torrey Craig that comes in as that backup small forward? Probably going to be Torrey Craig, to be honest. I don't think Porter's going to play, and I don't think they want to use Juancho there. I think it's going to be Torrey Craig as the backup small forward. But again, you had to give away a useful player who could have been your backup three and your backup four, because you signed shit contracts to other players and your owner was a tight ass. Simple as that. Bad management, bad ownership, and you had to give away Chandler for nothing. Now, as for how Wilson Chandler fits over in Philadelphia, they lost Marco Bellinelli. They lost Ersan Ilyasova. He becomes Ersan Ilyasova. Now, Ilyasova was playing 4-5, Chandler's more 3-4, Bellinelli was playing 2-3. So, does he take Bellinelli's backup 3 minutes and he takes Ilyasova's backup 4 minutes? Probably. So, there's 24 minutes or so there, backing up Robert Covington, Dario Saric, playing those roles behind those guys. And also with Markel Fultz now in the mix, he takes some of Bellinelli's minutes. It's fine for Philadelphia. Now, Wilson Chandler's not a good fantasy option. We know that. He does very little, even if he's playing big minutes, old baby neck. But it's a good move from the Sixers to get this depth, replace the Bellinelli Ilyasova minutes to a degree, more the Ilyasova ones, and be a useful contributor on what should be a very high seed, probably, you know, close to the 2 or 3 seed again, with Toronto and Boston there in the Eastern Conference. A solid rotation guy. Exactly what he would have been for this Denver team, who is pushing to make the playoffs. Huge move from Philadelphia. Oh, let's try again. Not really a huge move, but getting a rotation player for literally nothing and 2 second-round picks, when there's not really any free agents out there they're going to use that space for. It's a 1-year deal for old baby neck. It's fine. It's a good move. It's exactly what you should be doing. Acquiring assets, getting a rotational player. It's not wowing anybody. It's not the star hunting that Brett Brown was talking about, but it's still useful and it's still going to be solid. Now, I don't think he's going to have really much impact in, or he's not going to have any impact in standard fantasy leagues. Deeper fantasy leagues, and Wilson Chandler will be solid. He's not spectacular really in any sort of area. He was the 167th ranked player last year in 32 minutes. So expect him to fall outside the top 200 this year. But in your deeper leagues, there's something there, yeah, for Wilson Chandler. But it is, I think it's a good move from Philadelphia. We'll see exactly if that's, if that remains that way, but I do like that that deal. Let's have a look here at the next guy. Is, and this is one that it's not 100% confirmed, but from what I'm seeing, it's 99% confirmed. The Athletic is reporting it, and a couple of local Washington guys are reporting that it's very, very close and it's destined to happen. So we'll talk about it now, and that's Dwight Howard to the Washington Wizards. He's going to be signing the same contract that DeMarcus Cousins signed for the Golden State Warriors. 1 year, $5 million, the mid-level exception money to the Wizards. They didn't have a starting center after trading Marcin Gortat, so he moves in there and will be their starting center. And the numbers that he put up in Charlotte, I think that that's sort of what you can expect from him in Washington. Now, I think his usage will drop, of course, with Bradley Beal there, with John Wall there. They're much higher usage players, as they should be. Howard had a usage of 24% in Charlotte last season, but maybe more in line with what he did in Atlanta and Houston, where he had 19% usage rates. Maybe he goes down to that. But the reason you're getting Howard is for the 13 rebounds or so, the blocks, the high field goal percentage. Yes, the free throws are going to be an issue, but he's going to be a top 50-ish type of a player for this upcoming season because of the rebound, the blocks, the field goal percentage, and his minimal impacts on scoring. That is something that is worth looking at. He's going to be a useful enough fantasy player. Nothing spectacular, but fairly solid. Again, assuming this is what comes to fruition, but it appears that is the case. Let's move on now and talk a little bit about NBA Summer League, which did kick off yesterday in Sacramento and in Utah. So what I'm going to do there is just give like a performance of the day and a couple of notable performances across the games of the day. And of course, the big performance, or in my opinion, was Jaren Jackson Jr. of the Memphis Grizzlies, who knocked in 29 points in only 23 minutes and hit 8 triples. Yes, he only had 3 rebounds, and that was one of his issues in college. Not a great rebounder, but still had 2 blocks and knock down those threes. And I've talked about Jaren Jackson on this show quite a lot. Triple J is a guy who I think has the ability to be the best player in this draft class. I still think Doncic is the best player, but I was tossing up, you heard him many times, saying the real draft between Ayton and Jackson at number 2 in dynasty formats, I would have taken Jackson at 2. I think if you've got dynasty drafts coming up and you've got pick 2, it's going to be a legitimate question now from other people in your league as to whether Jackson goes in that spot. And that means if you're in pick 3, you're going to have a chance of potentially having either Jackson, Ayton, and Doncic fall down to you, which is a pretty solid position to be in. I don't expect him to shoot 62% on threes every night, but he showed that he can get them off. He showed that he looks solid. He can play his defensive stuff. He actually, and people, oh man, he fouls too much. Didn't have any fouls at all in this game, and I'm not really worried about the fouling issue that he displayed in college. I think that there is a... Now, the other positive thing here is he started alongside Deontay Davis, meaning that there's a chance that he is a starting power forward for Memphis even on opening night. Jamichael Green's nothing. Jarrell Martin, these aren't all that good players. So Jaren Jackson, who played power forward at Michigan State, could start next to Marc Gasol, play some minutes at backup center, and then move into that center position when Gasol is traded or moves on in a couple of seasons' time. So Jackson, I think... I've got massive upside hopes for him for Dynasty. He actually is probably at this point going to look like a standard league draftable guy. I wasn't sure that was going to be the case because I wasn't sure where the minutes were going to be. But if they're going to start him at power forward, then I'm all about Jaren Jackson Jr. Strong, strong performance from him in that first game against the Atlanta Hawks. A couple of other notable performances that are worth mentioning. Kendrick Nunn, you're going to say, who the hell's Kendrick Nunn? Well, he's an undrafted player that signed with the Golden State Warriors. He had played 30 minutes at point guard, had 19 points with 11 rebounds, only shot 20% from three, but had 2 assists, 2 steals, a block, contributing right across the box. Or he's a guy that that played in Oakland in his senior season in college, averaged 26 points with 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and 1.5 steals, and shot 39% from 3 across his 4-year career in college. We know the Warriors had success last season with Quinn Cook coming in and providing some point guard minutes. Now, Cook's on the roster now. Sean Livingston, probably more of a 2 at this point. So this is for more deeper dynasty formats. What Kendrick Nunn did, I think it's worth paying attention to. Another team might look at him as a third stringer. The Warriors might look to bring him in as well. But it was a solid enough performance, and a guy that was a little bit surprising that he was undrafted. Trae Young for the Atlanta Hawks had 16 points, struggled with his shot, 4 of 20 from the field, and only 1 of 11 from 3. But I thought he looked solid enough. The shots weren't falling, sure. But I thought most of the shots looked okay. He was able to get those shots off. He was able to be solid enough defensively without being spectacularly good there. So I thought it was a strong enough performance from Trae Young. And in this performance, shooting poorly in summer league, it doesn't really bother me in any sort of sense. Marvin Bagley III, I know he put down a poster dunk. You all would have seen that across social media. And that doesn't mean that you're a good player. It was good to see. And look, his stat line looks pretty good. 18 points, 6 rebounds, and 3 blocks. And the most encouraging thing here is the fact that he went 5 of 6 from the free throw line. He was not a good free throw shooter in college. But still, 3 blocks is fine. The defense wasn't good for Marvin Bagley. He basically was exactly what we predicted. A guy that can score, a guy that is going to struggle defensively, which he did, and a guy who has trouble with on offense with shot selection and ball movement. And those all those things were true in this game. I still have my concerns about him as an overall fantasy player with defensive numbers, with lack of assists, with shooting numbers, but this was strong. Now, whether he gets 30-odd minutes in the season for Sacramento, especially early on, seems doubtful given Dave Yeager's there, but it was a decent enough outing, but still not without question marks for Marvin Bagley. And then for San Antonio, Derek White, second-year point guard, who was drafted at the end of the first round last season, had 22-7-6 with a steal. 9 of 21 from the field and 3 of 9 from 3. DeJounte Murray is the starting point guard for the Spurs, but is Tony Parker going to be back? Will Derek White be moving into a larger role? I think that that's a possibility. And he looked strong in summer league last year, had some moments in the G League, had a couple of decent NBA games. But this is a good performance, and maybe he moves into a consistent backup role next season. He was a guy that translated quite well from a fantasy perspective before his rookie season, didn't really get much of an opportunity, but there is some real dynasty potential in him at some point moving forward, and maybe he can find himself a starting job in the NBA. Other performances of note, Harry Giles for the Kings looked pretty strong, 13 points in 25 minutes and a steal and a block, but the most important thing is he played, and he played 25 minutes. We didn't see him at all last season. We've been hearing about this combination of Bagley and Giles as his front court of the future, which doesn't mean much for Cauley Stein and for LeBissiere. It's another name to throw into that mix there with Randolph and Kufos. That's 6 front court guys who could all realistically be getting playing time. I think Giles has got some upside as a flyer type dynasty guy. You're still going to have those concerns with his knees, but this is a strong enough performance. Now, Justin Jackson was terrible. He's not good. I wouldn't be looking at him to take any sort of step forward at all. De'Aaron Fox was excellent, 23-8-6, and I don't think he really plays in summer league again. He looks stronger. He finished at the basket. He's still going to have some struggles, but he killed it as he should. And Frank Mason is locked in as the backup point guard, 16 with 9 assists. He looked really good in this game for the Kings as well. Svi Mykhailiuk for the Lakers had an all-time line, 15 points, no other stats, no rebounds, no nothing else, banged his threes in, which is exactly what he's going to need to do. Now people go, oh, in the Lakers, you talk about their non-shooting lineups, and I've seen many people say this on Twitter, all right, yes, Svi will come in, but is he going to actually get rotation minutes ahead of Rondo, Ball, Hart, KCP, Stevenson, Ingram, LeBron? Like, where does he get minutes ahead of those guys? Should be ahead of Lance, but it probably won't be. But it was a good outing from him. Mo Wagner also scored really well. 23 points. Took him a lot to get there. 2 of 9 from 3, but impressively got to the line 10 times. And scoring has never been an issue for him. Yeah, defensively, he still has his struggles. Had 2 steals and a block. But given their lack of center options, JaVale and Zubats are their centers, maybe Wagner can be a guy who does get enough minutes to be some sort of an offensive threat. Well, Josh Hart played very, very well, 23-3-4. He's better than Lance Stephenson. He should be playing above Lance Stephenson. You could make the argument that he's even better than Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. I think he's a really strong player. Probably won't be a fantasy asset for this season, but very well could be, depending especially on how things go with injuries. Now, Omari Spellman for the Hawks, onto the Hawks-Memphis game. He was okay. The Baptist John Collins looked pretty strong out there, 9-6 in his minutes, but I thought he moved well. And I think he's in for a big year this year, the Baptist. Well, Tyler Dorsey, 18-7-4, was the sort of game you expect for second-year players to have. And he had that. Jalen Adams, a guy that I talked about in a bit of a surprise guy in my dynasty rankings. I thought he looked pretty solid as a two-way guy as well for this team. And Kobe Simmons for the Grizzlies had 21 points in 27 minutes, while Javon Carter, 10-5-3. They were the starting backcourt. There's plenty of minutes available there. His starting shooting guard at the moment, probably Marshawn Brooks. So there are minutes available here for these guards with the Grizzlies. And Ivan Rabb also looked pretty good, 14 points in his bench role. For the Warriors, Jordy Bell, 4, 5, and 3 with 3 steals. His value, which was potentially coming, he's obviously limited by Cousins. But if Cousins is not there to start the season, then Bell could be worth a late pick in a draft, and you play him for the first 3-4 months, and then you need to move on. Well, Damian Jones is also going to be in that mix to get that starting role. He had 14-6 with a shit ton of fouls, which is what he does. But he was solid enough at the end of the season in those little opportunities that he got, and this was a good performance from him in this game. For the Miami Heat, Bam Adebayo looked how he should, 14-14, a nice double-double. Well, Derek Jones surprised me, because I don't think he's very good, with 24-11. I don't really think you should be getting any level of interest in him. For the Spurs, Lonnie Walker struggled a lot, 3-16 from the field, 7-3-2 with 2 steals and a block. Shot selection was a problem. At least he did have those defensive numbers, which is something I thought may hold him back when we're looking at his overall value, but he's not a guy that I'm super high on, as you well know from hearing my Dynasty Rank podcast. Well, Grayson Allen, 11-8-7. The ball handling was nice, but of course, on this Jazz team with Rubio, with Exum, with Don Mitchell, with Jingle and Joe, he's not going to get those opportunities this season, or really any season in the next 2 or 3, because of those other players around. Tony Bradley looked much, much better. Can he move ahead of Epe Udo for that third center role? A double-double with 4 blocks. He looked like a completely different player, and that's good because he struggled last season. Well, George Niang put up some good numbers. A guy who put up good numbers out of Iowa State, bounced around last season, drafted by Indiana, went to Golden State, ended up in Utah. And he's a guy that probably is not going to get that sort of playing time for Utah, but just look for him in a real deep dynasty. Same as Keelan Martin, who had 13-8. A guy was super productive in college, could be one of those interesting guys who catches on and for a tanking team down the stretch starts playing a role similar to, say, like Mike Henry did for Memphis last season. Now, Keelan Martin is a name to pay attention to. Guys, that will wrap it up for today's show. We'll be back with more free agency and summer league stuff tomorrow. Leave a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify, and of course on YouTube. Thumbs up, hit the subscribe button, and go ahead and tell your friends as well. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Paul Zipser.